Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios, and presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. 5 o'clock on a Wednesday, Caroline Fenton is here. Caroline, the owner of the single worst college football take I heard all last week, until I heard Chris Childers say that the SEC had lost their power. That took the cake. Caroline, your favor of the 4-4-2-2 playoff model had to drop down to number two. I'm sorry.
It's funny because it's like, it's not even a take. It's not a very strong one, at least. It's just like, hey, here are a couple of models that have been proposed, and this is the one that I think is best.
As I said to you then, and I will say to you now, you are the only person who is not on Tony Petitti's payroll. The Big Ten commissioner.
Rick Neuheisel agrees with me, and no offense, no disrespect to you. Between you and Rick Neuheisel, as far as college football takes are concerned, I will be okay with being in the same headspace as Rick Neuheisel rather than yourself.
Rick Neuheisel went to what school?
UCLA.
And what conference?
They're in the Big Ten.
And Rick Neuheisel's on what channel?
Well, he's on SiriusXM College, but he's also on CBS.
Which carries what conference?
Do you think that CBS is paying Rick Neuheisel to say that the 4-4-2 model is the best one?
I'm just saying, I think Tony Petitti's got a direct line to Rick Neuheisel.
Paid per mention for 4-4-2.
I'm just going to say.
You know what? Maybe I should be paid per mention for 4-4-2. I'm trying to buy a house.
You should. You're the one that went toe-to-toe with an athletic director about 4-4-2 over the weekend.
I did not go toe-to-toe. I asked him about it, and he disagreed with me. You know what? Maybe you are on the Louisville athletic director's payroll. You keep pointing the finger at me. Whoever smelt it, dealt it. Maybe you're really the one spreading propaganda.
Or maybe I'm on the SEC's payroll or the Big 12's payroll or Notre Dame's payroll, because they all feel the same way, too.
Well,
so just keep that in mind. Joe Rexroad is with us. Joe Rexroad and I disagree about many things, but we do not disagree about the 4-4-2-2 model and how it is not a good college football model. Joseph, how are you?
That's true. I'm Team Jared right here. I have to admit.
Thank you. And with that, it's time for Jared versus
Joe. SEC Bobos.
First off, Caroline, before you go, Joe, do you think that Rick Neuheisel, and I love Rick Neuheisel, I think he's great. Would you say that he counts, because he works for CBS, as on Tony Petitti's payroll?
No, not really. I think Rick Neuheisel has his own opinions.
Okay.
He can have bad ones.
He's someone that I think is above the forming opinions simply to appease the man.
I don't know, man. Have you ever watched an SEC championship game on CBS whenever the SEC is trying to get two teams in? And Gary and Brad Nessler, this was back in the day, were just...
All right, well, Gary and Brad Nessler, I think, are different.
And those are good men right there. But, Caroline, with that, you're up.
Jared, you go first this week. There's been a whole lot of talk about Jeffrey Simmons for a lot of reasons, which, of course, we can get into. How solid of ground do you think the relationship between Jeffrey Simmons and the Titans is?
I believe it is not on solid ground at all. Now, I believe the way the coaches feel about Simmons and the way the organization feels about Simmons may not be the same. Now, I don't have anything to back that off of. I just think the coaches know, like, if we don't get the best out of Simmons right away, we're all going to get fired. And I don't think the front office feels that way. That said, I think the Titans are upset with Simmons because they pay Simmons $23.5 million. And Simmons does not sack the quarterback, and they made Simmons out to be the leader of the team, and he doesn't do a very good job of that, and he's constantly saying things that end up with his foot inside of his mouth, and he didn't show up for OTAs when Callahan is out here preaching how important the offseason program is, and so on and so forth. And I think Simmons is probably upset with the Titans. This first popped into my head when Chad Withrow said on our show Friday, Jeffrey Simmons has probably had a lot of guys in the organization over the last couple of years, whether it's John Robinson, Mike Vrabel, Rand Carthon, Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, Ryan Tannehill, Kevin Byard, Danico Autry, whomever. And now it's just him. And Simmons is sitting there saying, these guys aren't doing enough for me. They're asking me to go out there and win all these football games by myself. I don't have Derrick. I don't have A.J. I don't have Byard. I don't have these guys anymore. And so they're asking this all of me, and that's they're ungrateful. And I want out of here because AJ got his get out of jail free card. Derek got his get out of jail free card. Vrabel got his get out of jail free card, and I'd like to have mine. And so I think they'll say all the right things because Simmons has to be smart enough to know that if he starts complaining about the Titans as a team, given the fact that he's overpaid, not underpaid, that's going to cause real problems for him with his next suitor. And I think the Titans would like to recoup fair value for Simmons and eventually move on. So I think they are headed to a divorce.
Yeah, I don't know if they're headed to a divorce. I don't know if that's feasible. I don't know if there's, there's a way, anytime soon to do that and recoup enough value. But I would agree that it's not a great situation. And I think you touched on, Jared, something that we talked about on our show today, and I don't think the point is made enough. Look, Jeffrey Simmons, there are a lot of fair criticisms of him, and we both think he should have been at voluntary stuff, and he is not an ideal leader, and he is not anymore a great player. I think you could make the case for him as a great player in 2021, and I don't think you really can since then. He's a very good player. He's still arguably the best player on this team, but that's the point, is Jeffrey Simmons, I think, is a malcontent because he has a right to be, because this team is completely dissolved around him. I mean, it's not his fault that the team has nosedived, that so many bad decisions have been made at the coach, GM, and ownership level. And so I think he's unhappy here because, say whatever you want about Jeffrey Simmons, Jeffrey Simmons does care about winning and losing. Jeffrey Simmons brutally hates losing, and that's all he's been doing the last couple of years. So I think I think both sides have fair criticisms of the other. I don't know that the divorce is coming, just because ultimately when it comes down to it, you mentioned the coaches, Jared. I mean, that's the thing. If they want to have any chance of being competitive this year, they need him on the field, and they need him at the best possible level he can be at this point.
I also think, too, like, Simmons may not like the fact that it's all falling apart around him, and I get that, but the $23.5 million is for you to make things better. Like, that's why they pay you that money. And I understand, you're not going to win with just a DT. But at the same time, Simmons, I think Simmons is one of those guys, we've all been around him, who whenever things go well, it's because of me. And whenever things don't go well, it's because of you. And that, to me, is Jeffrey Simmons. And I think that that attitude needs to change. And I don't think it's going to, because I think that's who Simmons is.
Yeah, I mean, look, give me Aaron Donald in his prime. Put him on this roster. You changing the bottom line significantly?
I think that Aaron Donald would still get more than 5.5 sacks and then complain about double teams.
Well, sure. No, he would play better. He'd produce more. But are the Titans winning more if the exact everything else is the exact same and it's just Aaron Donald and Jeffrey Simmons plays? I'll give him one more win.
I think you win three more games if Derrick Henry's on the team. And I don't think Derrick Henry is as valuable as Aaron Donald.
But remember, you're also replacing Jeffrey Simmons with Aaron Donald. Okay. So you're still replacing what is arguably the best player with Aaron Donald. Absolutely a way better player. The point being, that position is not saving a bad football team.
I don't think with Aaron Donald on the team, the Titans are going to get absolutely housed by Malik Willis or get run on for 355 yards by the Colts.
Maybe.
But, as far as a divorce is concerned, I mean, you just laid out how much money Jeffrey Simmons is making. I mean, he gets to live in Nashville, which I understand isn't New York City or Los Angeles, but it's a whole hell of a lot better than a lot of other NFL markets. So
try New York,
Jeffrey.
See how that goes for you, baby.
I mean, I don't see how Jeffrey Simmons would be, scratching and clawing, trying to get his way out of this team. And what are the Titans going to do? Trade him? For what? Anything they get in return, I don't think would be worth the absolute boo-hoo fest that would happen with Titans fans if they traded Jeffrey Simmons.
So if you're the Titans, this is where you have to determine how much of a cancer Simmons is.
Is he a cancer, or is he just not a leader?
If Simmons is a cancer at all. Again, I don't know.
I don't think he's a cancer.
I think he's the leader that the Titans want him to be.
Right.
But that's, I mean, like, partially that's on the Titans too, for not putting enough leaders on this team.
The reason why I say like they have to determine whether or not he's a cancer is because, or how much of a cancer he is because then I think that determines how much, how long you're willing to wait before you try to make a move. I mean, I don't think Simmons is going to be in his prime anymore when this team gets to the level of competition. But that doesn't mean that you can't use him because, again, you want to win, and the way to win, you want Cam Ward to get confidence by winning, and the way to do that is to have the defense force the other team, you know, force your offense to score 20 points instead of 25 points. But at the same time, if Simmons becomes too much, then you just have to take whatever you can get for him. You know, it may involve eating the money on the front end, you know, like in a signing bonus and sending him off. I think Kaharski put out last year, they think the value on Simmons would be a second round pick. If I'm the Titans and Simmons can play his way into a first round pick, I would deal him. Like if I can get a first round pick from a team at the trade deadline, I would deal him and I wouldn't even think twice about it. And I think that, again, if Simmons is such a cancer,
I'd be shocked out of my mind if they could come close. If they could get up, there's no way they're getting a first round pick.
I probably would take a second round pick today for Simmons.
What?
I think I would take a second round pick
on this sorry ass crap team?
Yes.
When they're trying to sell PSLs for a stadium that's opening in a couple of years, and Jeffrey Simmons is really kind of, other than Cam Ward, of course, is really kind of your only recognizable star on this team.
He got 5.5 sacks last year.
I understand that, but this is also a business. I mean, like, Jeffrey Simmons needs to do more. There is no doubt about that. Like, it is, yes, very well documented that he needs to do more. But trading him for a second-round pick right now, what does that do?
Oh, if you could give me a second-round pick today, I think I'd do it.
Why?
Because this team needs more draft choices. And, again, they finished in last place with Simmons. They can finish in last place without Simmons. I mean, I don't even think – and I do think there will be some boo-hooing if they trade Simmons. But I think Simmons has worn out his welcome with a lot of these fans. I don't know. Like, Joe, you've been text-lining the last couple of – I think there'd be a lot of people that if Simmons got traded would say good riddance.
Well, what percentage of those people are the kind of people that only go along with what the Titans do? That it's in John Robinson we trust until he gets fired, and then it's good riddance.
I think those are the people that would be most upset about them trading Simmons. But to your point, they like whatever the Titans do, so they would say good riddance then. I don't think there are a lot of Titan fans. I could be totally wrong about this. I don't think there are a lot of Titan fans out there. I think it's the boo-hooers now that are the ones that say, like, oh, Simmons is so good, and to your point, they flip whenever the Titans tell them what's next. I think that the intellectually honest Titans fans, I think, realize that Simmons is a little too big for his britches.
Well, I know Brian Callahan does not like the idea of sending him away for a second-round pick and going 3-14 again.
Let me tell you what does not matter to me. How Brian Callahan feels. I mean, Brian Callahan feels that teamwork is going to be the difference between winning and losing, even though Jeffrey Simmons isn't showing up for teamwork. So Brian Callahan's not very high on my list of priorities right now.
On Caroline. Okay, Joe, you go first. Cam Ward went 20 for 21 yesterday at OTAs. How big of a deal is that to you?
Like none. I mean, like it's better than bad numbers. It's better than, wow, Cam Ward threw four picks, or Cam Ward kept sailing passes, but it's, you know, I just can't get excited. I can't get excited about numbers like that in training camp, let alone, you know, on the second day of mini camp. Again, it's better than like, wow, what's going on with this guy? But to me, it's not any sort of, ooh, what, you know, wow, look what we have here. I mean, look, he's a talented guy. He went number one overall. He better be completing passes at a high clip in practice. And, you know, I know, like, today the Titans did the Denard Wilson threw the kitchen sink stuff at him and made it tougher on him and all that. And that's all good. It's all good work. And so, you know, you hope that he can – hit those gimmies and be accurate, but I just, you know, like to me, that's just what you would expect. The news, it's like, man, you know, dog bites man bites dog. Like the news is if he has a terrible day, because this, you know, unless it's like one of those days where they really go after him and try to do everything they can to mess him up. I mean, on a typical practice day, you sure hope he has numbers like that.
So I'm a little torn on this one because there's a part of me that says, like, would you want a pat on the back for doing what you're supposed to do? Again, it was first and second down. There were a lot of, you know, throws over the middle and throws into zones and things like that. Now, there was a very nice throw to Gunnar Helm. There was a nice little off-balance throw to Io Manor that I liked. But, again, it was fine. I thought he was fine yesterday. But at the same time, I went out to practice when Malik Willis was trying to quarterback the Tennessee Titans, and so did you two. And Malik Willis looked like he didn't even know what color jersey his team was wearing. And so Cam certainly above that. And last year with Will Levis, he threw a ball into the lake. And then the Titans made Jim Wyatt go back and edit his story to say that the ball bounced into the lake. And so
it did bounce.
So when it goes to.
It's still funny.
And not only
funny. Yeah.
I've never seen a ball go into the lake, like ever. Like, jugs machined into it. I've never seen that. And so, you know, when instead of the guy stinking like Malik stunk and everyone was like, oh, no, Jared, you're a hater, or Levis stunk, and it was, oh, no, Denard's defense. I mean, at least it's like, well, he didn't stink. So, again, like, am I patting him on the back for doing what's expected? He's the number one pick in the draft. Yeah, I expect you not to stink. But at the same time, the last two guys have stunk. So I'm torn on how to answer this one. Like I said, he was fine. He was fine yesterday. I watched it. It was fine. It was good, solid, fine. But, you know, the people that didn't cover the practice were like, ah, Cam lit it up. And that's where I'm like, okay, that's a little over the top. Because that wasn't what it looked like yesterday.
These people that you're calling out.
Bounced in the lake. Well,
Paul was doing it. You think about it.
Paul was doing the calling out today on the morning show about the people that didn't want to ask Jeffrey Simmons the question. That was something.
Hey, good for Paul.
Good for Paul. More Jared versus Joe to continue next. Stillman & Company, 1025 The Game. Caroline, before you go, I got to read LD from McMinnville's text into the text line.
Let's hear it.
He said, did Buck cover practice? Because today, Buck said Cam's performance was amazing. Let me say this. I asked Buck yesterday during practice, I said, Buck, if somebody asked you, how's Cam Ward look, what would you say? And Buck said to me, well, I'd say he looks like a rookie. Again, I didn't hear what Buck said or didn't say, but it would not surprise me if Buck went from, oh, he looks like a rookie, to, oh, he looks amazing. I just want to put that out there.
I'm glad that you did.
Would it surprise you?
Would it surprise me? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Buck has more integrity than that.
It would surprise me. Come on now.
All right. Okay. Jared, house settlement came down Friday night. Schools can directly pay players, so on and so forth. Will the house settlement do more harm or do more help for college football?
I don't really know what the house settlement's actually going to do. And I don't really know this for a bunch of reasons. Number one, I don't know if this NCAA Deloitte clearinghouse is actually constitutional. Because I keep thinking in my head, so basically, Johnny Joe, who's not represented by anybody in this house settlement, Johnny Joe and Joe Rex Rhodes Tire Barn have come into an agreement that they'll give him $200,000 if he plays at Oklahoma State. So now they take that to the clearinghouse, and the clearinghouse says, nope, can't do it. So then they say, oh, okay, well, I won't endorse Joey's Tire Barn, but they still give him the $200,000. How are they going to find out who did what? They could say that the contract was for $2,000 and then pay him $200,000. I mean, we saw college coaches cheat the rules when you couldn't pay the players. We've seen college coaches cheat the rules when you could indirectly pay the players. So I'm sure they'll cheat the rules now, even if you can directly pay the players. I still think the clearinghouse thing is completely unconstitutional. The NCAA can't tell Joe Rex Rhodes Tire Barn and Johnny Joe what they can and cannot do, right? And then secondly, when it comes to the kind of this cap that's been put on the schools and the teams, You mean to tell me Alabama is going to be okay with paying their football team roughly the same amount that Vanderbilt's paying its football team? I can't imagine that. Texas? A&M? Like, you're telling me that A&M is going to say, yeah, you know what? We're going to spend the exact same amount of money as everybody else. When they've got oil boosters there that are like, I'll give you $5 billion. Like, why would they do that? So, I don't understand how the clearinghouse part, which is incredibly important, is constitutional. I expect a lawsuit on that on July 2nd, if not July 1st, and I think that will lose. And then on top of it, I again just don't see the teams. Like, it sounds good, you know, of the, hey, everybody's got $20.5 million, but I can't see these schools not trying to have an advantage. So, again, you ask if it does more harm than good. I'm not really sure what it exactly does as far as college athletics is concerned. And I'm not exactly sure if any of this is actually going to work.
I agree with most of that. It's comical. Of course they're going to skirt the rules. Of course they're not going to, you know, they all say that they're going to hold each other accountable. But the fact that we even have conferences, the Western Conference, which is what the Big Ten was originally named, you know, was 100 years ago because Iowa was, like, using 30-year-olds and kicking the crap out of people in college football. I mean, like all this stuff, it all exists because people have been trying to find an edge and win forever, and that'll never stop. So I generally agree it's not going to work. I mean, you can do whatever you want. You can have whatever rules you want, but you're open to lawsuits unless you get – antitrust exemption from Congress. And of course they're still hoping for that life raft, and there's talk and there's rumbling, but I gotta see that to believe it. So to answer your question though, Caroline, will it do more harm or help? I'll go with help, just because this is the next inevitable iteration before we finally get to where, you know, we should have gotten a long time ago. But, like, of course they're going to make it as painful and ridiculous as possible, which is some form of collective bargaining, some form of a formalized employer-employee relationship. Again, to me, you know, it can be a contract labor thing with collective bargaining. That is something that at least lawyers tell me you can do and avoid some of the consequences that the college sports leaders say will happen. So I'll say help, just because, okay, let's get to this. Let's watch this fail miserably. And then eventually we're going to get to, I think, a place where there's, a cap. You're still going to have a lot more, like you said, Jared, you're going to have these schools with more money. I mean, they're, you know, it's like, to me, it's going to be like baseball. You know, it's like you're going to have some rules and some restrictions, but you're still going to have whatever, quote unquote, bigger market teams that are going to outspend other teams. And that doesn't always necessarily lead to winning, by the way, as we've seen in baseball. But I think that's where we're going to be eventually.
Are going to get paid under the table again. We're going back to that.
Well, I agree.
Going back to bagmen.
Yep.
And McDonald's bags.
Yep.
But you don't even need to
Jeremy
do it.
Pruitt. Because Jeremy Pruitt is just salivating at the opportunity to get back into college football.
You know, Will Wade was just ahead of his time.
You don't even need to do that, because when it comes to the McDonald's bags and the things like that, that's because you're trying to hide the money. In this case, like, the NCAA cannot audit a booster's business because they want to. Like, the NCAA does not have that type of authority. And so I don't understand. And plus, the NCAA, they don't even, I truly, in my opinion, believe about that, like, that they're going to really enforce this pretty hard. When's the last time NCAA get on somebody about going to class?
Yeah, but this isn't the NCAA. Let's clarify. This is the new acronym, the CSC, the College Sports Commission. This is separate from the NCAA, just to be technically correct there.
Yeah, I mean, again, whatever. If this were 2006 and we went from, you better not give that athlete that haircut for free, to we're paying them $20.5 million, that would be something. This, to me, feels like there's no real change in the day-to-day, other than how directly or indirectly the money is coming from. Caroline, what's next?
And also potentially more lawsuits, which I know is what every college sports fan wants, is, more boardrooms and courtrooms in college sports.
I would just like to tell every pearl-clutching pawpaw for 30 years that said things like, we can't pay the players, they're college kids, how to ruin the game, that have said things along the lines of, you know, those boys, they got a scholarship, that's good enough, that we have now paid the players for like 5 years and we have not lost college sports. They still exist. And they'll still exist now. Feinbaum's on TV sitting there being like, well, that's all of them. NCAA is now dead. Paul, you've been watching college sports for the last 3 years?
Well, the NCAA is dead, but that doesn't mean college sports are.
It didn't die today. It died 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Just look at Omaha. Like, if Murray State can get to Omaha over Texas, like, I think everything's going to be okay. Okay, Joe, you go first. And I have been dying to ask you this question. The NBA Finals ratings stink. They are in the toilet. They are horrific. The worst that the NBA has had in a non-COVID affected season. How good of a product is the NBA?
I love the NBA product. Now, I'm glad you asked me this question because Jared, lied, of course, lied through his teeth and misrepresented what I said.
We played the cut on the air.
Jared, I know you did. And it was like, okay, so you said, John said it's a more entertaining product than in the 80s and 90s. And then Chad Withers was like, did he really say that? And then you played this cut in which I not in any way said that. And let me just tell you, and you can ask Robert Stanley if you'd like, because he's been there for every one of these. I've said 10 million times on my show, my favorite thing in the history of sports is late 80s NBA. I will never love anything more than that. There will never be a more entertaining product to me than that. I'm also saying, yes, over 30, 40 years, players get bigger, stronger, faster, more skilled, more nutrition, etc. In every sport we advance, and in the sprinting and the swimming and the football, but everybody seems to think, no, basketball's in a time capsule, and it never could get better than Michael Jordan and Luke Longley. So let's make sure we know what we're talking about here. The product, I love it. I love basketball. I think people who hate the NBA product don't really like basketball. That's my opinion. I think it's a great product, and I'm not surprised by the ratings,
everyone hates basketball?
No. Well, I mean, if we're going to talk, my favorite thing on our show is when people get on the text line and they start yelling at me about ratings, and they're like, but the Stanley Cup playoffs, that's where it's at. I'm like, okay, well, you're still talking multiple times more people watching the NBA Finals than the Stanley Cup Finals. We know that, right? And again, I love them both. So are we sitting here crying about how bad of a product hockey is because their ratings aren't good? I mean, I love the product. I'm not going to let my opinion of a product be dictated by ratings. I'm not surprised the ratings aren't good. There's not a lot of sex appeal to this matchup. The market thing, I think, has been a little overplayed, but you have smaller markets who care about the teams, and then you don't have, SGA is a fantastic player, but is he a player who moves the needle in this league? No, not compared to a lot of other guys in the league. So, the ratings aren't good. I'm not surprised. I love the product. I think it's a high level of basketball. I think it's great players, great teams, great coaching. I love it. I love basketball. So that's all I really have to say about it. You're welcome to disagree.
So I don't think
and
I need to.
And if you're Jared, you're welcome to take those words and mangle and twist them and lie, which is what Jared likes to do.
To his point about Chad, we played the cut with Chad, and then Chad laughed at your take.
But you never demonstrated what you were claiming because I didn't say that. The most entertaining product in sports history to me, let me say again, as I've said a million times, is the late 80s, my beloved Bad Boys against Jordan with Magic, with Bird, with Barkley, Ewing. I'll never love anything more. So, again, you just lied about what I said.
Drexler. Now, let me say this. I have had it up to here with the basketball bennies like Joe and Michelle Beadle said the same thing and other people that are like, if you don't like these finals, then you don't like basketball. Because I'm sorry. I like basketball. I grew up playing basketball. I worked in college in basketball. I was on the radio in the number one college basketball market in America. I grew up playing NBA Live on the PlayStation before the 2K series even came out. I've watched The Last Dance 1,000 times. So you can't tell me that I don't like basketball. I watched the game on Sunday night. Lindsay and I got home probably midway through the first quarter, and I told her, I said, I'm going to watch basketball, and I don't think you're going to want to watch basketball. So I'm going to go downstairs, and I'm going to watch basketball. So I went downstairs, and I started watching basketball, and I got to tell you, I found myself staring into my phone because I had such little interest in the basketball game that was on in front of me. And then when it got to the third, the end of the third period, the end of the third quarter, I had to turn it off. I had to. I was so bored. I was like, what am I doing here? And so don't blame me. Don't blame me for that.
It was a
because I think there were a lot of people out there that were like, yo, this game sucks. Turn it off because it's so boring. And that's how I felt. It felt like watching paint dry on Saturday, on Sunday night.
So let's go back to the golden era when all the games were amazing. There were never any blowouts. It was all one-point games, and Michael Jordan always hit the winning shot. I mean, it's amazing how we want to romanticize the past.
Sometimes he missed them.
There are blowouts in series sometimes, and they're not very fun to watch. I agree.
Yeah, but Michael Jordan blew out the Utah Jazz in game four. Or no, I want to say it was game three in 98. You know, I think they blew him out
every minute. It was so fun to watch Tony Kukoc finger rolls. I know. Let's romanticize the past.
I put it to you like this. More than 9 million people watched it. So I think they probably felt the same way.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, Joe is just of the belief that we only remember the good times from the 90s and we don't remember the bad times. I disagree. Caroline, who wins this week?
People did a whole lot of agreeing today. I give Jared the slight edge here for the basketball take. Joe's going to love basketball no matter what. And look, I get it. I feel the same way about baseball. The baseball could be a horrific product, and Rob Manfred could make stupid decisions about the league, but I will defend Major League Baseball until my last breath. But I think it's undeniable to say that this NBA product is not very good, and it doesn't feel like the NBA or the league affiliates, cough, cough, ESPN, are really doing much about it to fix it. So Jared,
I actually think ESPN's hurting it. Thank you. Yes, Victor, right over
here.
Did
you see that there was no script finals on the court in game one?
Oh, no. Did you see the CGI finals logo they put up there?
Yeah, it's bad.
Did you see how many ads were on the court during the game?
Yeah. No, Adam Silver is not a good commissioner. I mean, I have no argument to that.
Adam Silver came in and everybody thought he was great because he kicked Donald Sterling out of the NBA. But pretty much every decision after that has been a train wreck. Guys, thank you as always. Jared versus Joe here on the program. And speaking of the NBA, I have spent a lot of time today talking about the NBA. So I do want to get into one thing that absolutely is driving me crazy. And I just hit on it right there. But I find it, I've figured out exactly how I feel about it. We'll do that next. Stillman & Company, 102.5 The Game.
They have yet to lose back-to-back games in this playoff run. The NBA Finals are tied at one game apiece. Let's go to George Sedano.
Thank you, Mike Shea. You guys have only lost back-to-back games twice all season. You showed a ton of resilience again tonight. What was different?
Yeah, we just used the opportunity to get better. We've done a really good job of that all year, and last game was no different. Tonight is the same thing. We did some things good tonight, we did some things bad, and we got to be able to get better and get ready for game three.
There you go, game three tonight. And I have got to say something that is driving me just batty when it comes to the NBA. And I heard, you know, somebody texting to the text line and our phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Sean says, Joe Rexroad's NBA takes are brought to you by ESPN. Let me say this. I believe that ESPN is doing a disservice to the NBA. And the NBA needs to kind of hold ESPN a little more accountable. But I feel like ESPN's really let them down. Because how many advertisements do we have to have on the court? I mean, I'm watching the other day. They got bullied into putting a CGI cursive finals logo on the court after game one. But we have advertisements everywhere. There's an advertisement in the finals logo for YouTube TV, and that's on the court. Then there's the advertisement for the arena sponsor, which, again, that's fine. I get it. Then there's the advertisement down by each side of the basket that they have superimposed. Then there's the YouTube TV advertisements on each bench. Then there's the board, you know, behind the scorer's table that has an advertisement. Then the baseline has a beer advertisement on it. It's like, how many ads do we need? And then on top of it, we've got the jersey advertisements. They don't have the finals logo anymore. I mean, we got the Indiana Pacers have a QR code on their uniform. And it reminds me, and no finals logo, and it reminds me of when the Nashville Cats, the first iteration of the Nashville Cats existed, when they went to the Arena Bowl with Andy Kelly as the quarterback and they lost to Jay Gruden and the Orlando Predators, and they had an Amoco, the old gas station, an Amoco logo on the jersey. And I thought, this was before basketball and baseball and hockey and all those sports went to the jersey patch, and I thought, wow, they are so poor that they have to put an Amoco patch on their uniform. That's because they're that poor. Well, I know the NBA's not poor because I know how much money ESPN's paying the NBA. I know how much money Comcast, which is NBC, and Amazon are going to be paying the NBA going forward. You don't need a jersey patch. You don't need to cheapen your own product. Put the finals logo back on the floor. And then with ESPN, and I mean this with all due respect to Doris Burke, because Doris Burke is a good broadcaster, and Richard Jefferson, he's kind of relatively new to this, but that is not a number one broadcast crew. And I just think it cheapens the product. It's like when ESPN had Booger McFarland on the sideline in a little booger mobile, as opposed to getting Joe Buck and Troy Aikman to call the games. It's like when Harold Reynolds and Tom Verducci were calling the game with Joe Buck for the World Series. No, let's go get John Smoltz. So the NBA, again, I will make my prediction on the rating. I think it's going to be bad again. They have yet to crack 9 million. For the first time pretty much ever outside of COVID, they have failed to crack 9 million for the first time for the first two games. And I'll have my prediction on the ratings next. Stillman and Company, 102.5 The Game. Am I wrong, Stillman and Company, am I wrong for thinking that the outcome of tonight NBA Finals game nobody really cares about, but the ratings for tonight NBA Finals game people care about? So here's my prediction. Tonight, OKC wins comfortably. I believe OKC will win what will end up being a gentleman's five-game sweep. And so they'll win comfortably tonight, and they'll put all the pressure on Indiana in a way that'll make that happen. And I'm going to put the final TV rating at 8.24 million people, which would be a drop from game one and game two, which both cracked 8.7 million, but would be the lowest non-2020, so that was the COVID year when it was in October, it would be the lowest non-2020 Game 3 of NBA Finals on record. And I think that's what we'll get tonight. And if the basketball is great, maybe that'll make it more entertaining. I will try to watch it tonight, but we shall see what the rating ends up being. Put me down, David Reed, for 8.24 million viewers, and I'm going to ask you, higher or lower?
I'm going to go higher.
Okay. Again, I thought it was going to be the sevens for game two, so I'll give them credit that it was 8.7 or whatever. That's it for us. Stillman and Company. We'll see everybody tomorrow at 2.